Hello and welcome back. Tonight we're going to get into our second area of tort law, which is a very big area of the law. It's a very important area of the law. It's where individual people can seek recoveries for harm that they have suffered, either by means of an intentional act of someone or negligence of someone. And we're going to delve into that even deeper today. Last time, as you know, we did kind of a general overview of definitions of what a tort is and the difference between torts and crimes. And we kind of gave an overview of the types of torts that are out there. Tonight, we're going to get into both intentional torts and negligence and what those are and what those mean and the standards for that. We're going to talk a little bit more about definitions, and then we're going to delve right in. After this, we're going to talk in our next lecture about liability and foreseeability, but let's talk right now about the true meaning of torts with intentional torts and negligence. What is an intentional tort? We talked about last time, it's purposeful. It's willful misconduct or intentional wrongs. Black's Law Dictionary defines an intentional tort as a tort committed by someone acting with general or specific intent. And remember, the intent is not related to the harm. It's related to the act. So even if you don't intend the harm, if you intend the act, you've got the intent. General intent is been described by Black's Law Dictionary to mean the intent to perform the act. You may not intend the consequences. If you shove somebody away from you, you may not intend that they fall down and hurt their head. But at the end of the day, if you intended to shove it, that person, then the harm that befalls them is part of this intentional act. Specific intent means the intent to accomplish that precise act. And as we said, a person's deemed to have acted intentionally if he or she has a conscious desire to perform the act, not the consequence, but the act itself. Under the definition of intent, a person who has no conscious desire to actually cause the consequences is still responsible. Why? Because they intended to do the act itself. What about negligence? Negligence, on the other hand, is not intentional. It's by its very definition is unintentional. Negligence is the unintentional failure to use and take reasonable care. You have a duty to be a reasonable person, to use reasonable precautions, what a ordinary and prudent and reasonable person would do, to act in such a way as to protect others from unreasonable risks. Black's Law Dictionary defines the term tort as a civil wrong other than a breach of contract. And that can flow either from the intentional act or from negligence. And it defines negligence as the failure to exercise the standard of care that a reasonably prudent person would have exercised in a similar situation, and which falls below the legal standard to protect others against unreasonable risk of harm. Again, negligence is based on these elements, and they are a duty. You have to have a duty to that person, and that duty is a societal duty that is imposed upon you. You have to breach that duty, and you have to breach it as an unreasonable person. And there has to be harm there, because again, that old adage, no harm, no foul. If there's no harm, there's no tort. You have to have harm there. And your duty and breach of duty has to create that harm. It has to cause it. It's the but-for test. But for my leaving snow on the sidewalk, he would not have fallen and hurt himself. And lastly, you need to have foreseeability. Foreseeability is where I can tell as a reasonable person that if that duty is breached and harm is caused, then I foresaw that that would happen. And as a result of that, those are the essential elements under negligence law. We talked last time a little bit about the types of intentional torts. First and foremost, you have assault, which is the reasonable apprehension of an intentional, imminent, unconsented, harmful, or offensive touching. So if I hit someone in the face, that is an assault, even if I don't actually hit them. Battery is when I actually hit them. Assault is the fear of being hit. And battery is actually the hitting. So it, whereas you can have an assault without a battery, whereby I'm afraid you're going to hit me because you come so close that you almost do it, or I duck and you miss, that's an assault. But a battery is when I actually connect with you and knock you down and hurt you. Those can be offensive touchings too, where I don't actually harm you, but I offend you. If I grab a young lady's backside, that can be an offensive touching. And as a result of that, that is an assault, or it is a battery, or both. If I don't do that, I come so close that I almost do, it's an assault. And if I actually grab the person, then it is a battery. Now, when can you have a battery without an assault? Well, I don't have the apprehensive of fear if I don't ever see it. If I get punched and I'm not aware that that punch is coming, I've never had an assault because I don't have that fear of that apprehension of getting hit. But I got hit. Whereas where I duck and I don't actually get hit, that's merely an assault. When I don't see the punch coming, that is a battery without the assault. Trespass. Trespass occurs when a person makes an unauthorized, unprivileged entry onto the land of another person. So if I get invited on the land, that's not trespass. If I am a police officer who is entitled, or a firefighter who's entitled, or what we call privilege, to enter the land, that's not a trespass. It has to be intentional. I have to intentionally go onto that land. I don't have to intend to trespass. I have to intend to be on that land. Malicious prosecution and false imprisonment are self-explanatory. If I bring a groundless complaint against a person, that can be malicious prosecution. False imprisonment, if I see the paper boy at the door and I hold him inside the closet of my house, I grab him, that can be false imprisonment. Defamation, if I say things about someone that are untrue, and they injure their reputation, that is defamation. If I do it in a written form, that's libel. If I do it in a spoken form, that's slander. And together they constitute defamation. I can also intentionally interfere with contractual relations. This occurs when the non-contracting party or third person wrongfully interferes with the contractual relations of another party. And lastly is intentional infliction of emotional distress. This is when I cause you such outrageous conduct that I harm your emotional well-being to the point where it results in physical manifestations. You're throwing up, you have a headache, something of that nature. Those physical manifestations are necessary for this. But intentional infliction of emotional distress, too, is an intentional tort. What about negligence? Negligence is a much broader category. Why? Because you don't have to have that intent. There's no intent that's required to be proven. The elements of negligence have to be there. There's five of them. Duty, negligence requires a duty of a standard of care that's recognized by law. There has to be a breach of the duty. The person who commits the tort has to breach that duty, has to fail to exercise reasonable care. As we said before, there has to be harm there. No harm, no tort. Negligence requires that a person sustain provable harm from the breach of duty. There has to be a causation element. Negligence requires that the harm that occurred as a result of that breach of duty was sustained because of that breach of duty. That it's the but-for test. If that action never occurred, then it didn't happen. Well, if it did happen because you had that breach of duty, you have causation. And lastly, foreseeability. Negligence requires that the harm sustained had to be foreseeable as a result of breaching the duty. You have, as we discussed last time, three major actions in negligence. The first one being personal injury. If I'm physically hurt to my person, that's personal injury. Product liability. If I get injured as a result of a defective product because of a defective design or manufacturing defect or their failure to warn how to use the product, I may be able to sustain a recovery if I was injured as a result of that. And this recovery can be had from anyone in the line of manufacture or sale. And lastly, malpractice. People who have been injured from professional negligence may be able to recover from malpractice. These professionals have a higher degree of skill and competence. They're frequently licensed. And when they do not use their professional skill, it's not just a reasonable person, it's a reasonable professional in that field in which they're practicing. If they don't use that prudence, that competence, and that skill, then you can recover from malpractice. That's it for negligence and intentional torts. Next time, we're moving on to liability and foreseeability. See you next time.